Hello, Carrington and Quinn.
Hello, Kevin.
Welcome to episode 15 of Eaten by a Grew, the Infocom podcast. We played Plundered Hearts. And because this is a game written by women for women, we invited an actual live woman onto the podcast to play it and review it with us. And that would be you, Quinn.
Hello and welcome to Open... Wait, where are you people? How'd you get in here?
Security!
I get that a lot.
You get security called on you a lot?
A lot.
And that's just me.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
I plundered some hearts. Hearts were plundered. I don't say how many hearts, but there were many hearts. Much plundering.
For a game about piracy, I understand piracy involves raping and pillaging. There was a lot of raping in this game.
There was a lot of dancing as well, which I really liked.
Yes, yes.
Someone asked me to describe this game in two words.
Please describe this game in two words.
Super rapey.
That was on the back of the box, actually.
Yeah, it really kind of surprised marketing let that buy, but
yeah, I will say, I mean, we won't get to the spoilers, I guess, yet, but yeah, if it's good that it was written by a woman, because otherwise it was uncomfortable as it's written, and if it hadn't been written by a woman, it would have been unplayably uncomfortable.
I think it was uncomfortable either way. I was listening to some other podcasts today about, they're talking about movies in the 80s and how like a lot of them haven't aged well, and how there was like a lot of naked boobs in the 80s movies, you know, and I'm just like thinking about this game, I'm just like, yeah, maybe it was okay for the time, but I don't know. I felt uncomfortable playing it.
I loved it.
As you should.
Did you?
Now, I also felt uncomfortable during a lot of it, but I you know, because it's an 80s thing. I recently rewatched Revenge of the Nerds, and talk about something that does not hold up well. I thought that was a movie that people should like and not be horrified by, but rewatch it with modern sensibility, and it is shockingly awful. So same sort of thing here. I think it put me in the mindset that I got swept up in the story, and I liked the dancing, and I liked the romance, and I liked the puzzles, and I liked solving things other than by violence, mostly. I dug it. But you know what we should do first? We should talk about other people who have written in.
Speaking of making people uncomfortable, let's read other people's mail.
Good plan.
Yes.
I didn't even delete all the email. I'm getting pretty good at, like,
wow,
not deleting. I responded to a couple of people. I felt really like a full on adult. It was pretty good.
How many times since we last recorded 3 weeks ago did you delete all of your email?
None times. So unexpected.
Then why haven't you answered my email then, Carrington?
Just because I don't delete it doesn't mean I'm gonna answer.
Sigh.
So we had somebody named Vladimir. I think it's pronounced Vladimir, but with a W. But Vladimir write in by email to say, hello, thanks for the interesting podcast. Really enjoyed the episode about Sorcerer. Cool that people are still talking about old Infocom games. And then he went on to point out an error on our website where the Twitter links weren't working. And so they got fixed. So thank you, Vladimir. Because of you, we once again have working links on our website. And I think somebody else also wrote in... where we had a missing problem, another missing thing on our website.
Was it talent? Is there talent missing?
A lot of people wrote about that, but it was, I think, a missing link from episode 6. There was a Mark Blank interview, and we had forgotten to put the old linky in the linky place, and now the linky is in the linky place. So the listeners are solving our web problems.
I'm glad you found that, because he asked about some thing that we mentioned like a year ago. I was like, I don't know, I have a lot of conversations. I do a lot of podcasts. I have no idea what that
looks. I have very few conversations.
It's so easy if you remember. We got an email from Wes Frazier saying, hi, I wanted to thank you for your podcast. I got into the Infocom games in high school, a little after Infocom's heyday, when their box games started circulating at one of the more permanent booths at my hometown flea market as a kid. I was a big Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy / Douglas Adams fan, and was very eager to destroy myself on both the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Bureaucracy. I only ever played a few Infocom games, though, Bureaucracy, Hitchhiker's, Zork 1, and a little bit of Leather Goddesses of Phobos. However, while I love the games conceptually, I kind of grew frustrated with how much cheating I had to do to complete them, tell me about it, and haven't seriously touched them again in a decade or more. Listening to your podcast, though, has rekindled my curiosity over the genre. Since I've been listening to your podcast, I've been poking a little at the Inform programming language. I packaged the Gargoyle interpreter for NetBSD, and I've just ordered a copy of the Infocom Fantasy Collection off eBay so I can give Wishbringer a go to get my feet wet. Anyway, just wanted to thank you for the hours of entertainment you bring to my commute and for rekindling my interest in the genre. If and when you guys cover Hitchhiker's game, you should spend some time discussing and poking around the unreleased Milliways sequel that was leaked to the web a few years back.
Ooh, that sounds like I did fun. Not know about that.
I knew that they were working on it. I didn't know that the unfinished game was leaked. We should look into that.
We could do an unfinished episode.
Excellent.
Speaking of ports, he talked about porting a thing. Mm. Apple II Wunderkind Cucumber. Recently ported the Infocom Apple II interpreter to ProDOS. Remember, that was a buzz on the net recently. Mm-hmm. And then Wondercracker 4AM is writing a front end for launching Infocom games on a hard drive. And then Cucumba went back and said, aha, and because he makes everything better and smaller than should be possible. Mm-hmm. So wrote a save game parser that displays like the last location and the time of the game, like just make it something awesome. And the front end is being written in something called WeGUI. I don't know, WeGUI.
Sounds dumb.
Quinn, does that ring a bell at all?
No, sounds like something written by a talentless hack.
Do you know her name, Quinn Ducky? It's written by you.
It is.
Fancy lady.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited that someone's actually using it for something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally awesome. Nice. And it looks amazing, too. Like the whole, here's your game, here's the time, here's where you saved. Like, it's just, it's nicer than the stuff I've got going on now.
I have, 4AM was showing me the screenshots and stuff, and he asked if I had any ideas for it, and I said, well, you need to have the InvisiClues in there. And then they did it. And that was me. That was all me right there. So, yeah.
Yeah, big idea, man.
Nothing to do with them.
Yeah, right.
It's just all you.
The InvisiClues is pretty awesome, though.
Yes.
Yes.
It's all much awesome stuff going on in the Apple II. So I will think very shortly use that system for a game we play because I think it will be fun to do so. I like playing it on the original hardware. What else did we get email-wise? Malcolm Robinson wrote in to say, hi, guys. My name is Malcolm, which is a good opening. Just wanted to say that this show is great and keep it up. Just discovered it and binged the whole series this week at work. It's really cool to hear people talk about such a niche genre as this, and I'm loving it. I was born in the 90s and started playing point-and-click adventures before discovering Zork and the Lurking Horror, one of the scariest games, and I've gone on to even write some interactive fiction of my own. Sorry for the life story. Just wanted to say the text adventures are something I'm passionate about, and it's always great to find podcasts about things I love. And P.S., this is the bit that I like the best, P.S., I always type take and not get. Mm. My response to that mostly is people were born in the 1990s. Oh my gosh.
It's not a thing you can do.
People can't have been born in the 1990s. Mm. There's no way people were born that late.
We got an email from Nathan Simpson, who is the guy behind one of my favorite Infocom bugs pages, which I check after playing every game. He said, love this Sorcerer episode. Congratulations to Carrington on winning honestly. It seems no one has the patience anymore. He's looking at me, I think. But solving text adventure puzzles by waiting and thinking is still one of my favorite gaming experiences. Sorcerer is one of the most Infocom-y of Infocom games. A second Zork trilogy had been planned since before the release of Zork 3, so the obligation to write Z5 was probably seen as a necessary money-making chore. It's certainly Moretzky's work, but so much was influenced by what had come before. Sorcerer even incorporates a last couple of pieces from the mainframe Zork. At least two of the Infotator creatures, Dornbeast and the Brogmoid, were named for Infocom staff. Mike Dornbrook was a roommate of the imps at MIT. He became the tester for the Zork games, then started his own hint service. When they went off to create Infocom, he went to business school in Chicago. He got permission to use the name for the Zork users group, which started publishing both the New Zork Times and the InvisiClues. After graduating, Dornbrook came to Infocom. They took over the users group, and he became product manager. Dornbrook had been credited for a lot of the special touches in Infocom's packaging and The Dorn's paralyzing glare is apparently an Infocom in-joke. Ernie Brogmas, another MIT alum, was Infocom's product manager. Both of these creatures appear in later games, the Dorn in Beyond Zork, which belongs more to the Enchanter series than to Zork, and the Brogmoid in Zork Zero. Looking forward to the next episode. A guest is a great idea. Oh, good. We brought one. Good thing. Plundered Hearts is a beautiful game, though quite buggy. Too bad it never got a second release, but by that time, Activision was really pushing quantity. You may want to look in some of the things Amy Briggs said about it in her GitLab interview. I also want to add, I found a bug in Plundered Hearts, and I wrote to Nathan about it, and he said he thought he had heard about this particular bug, but he couldn't find it written down anywhere, so it's going to the website, credited to me, so yay me.
Excellent.
Yes.
You're getting very good at finding the bugs in these
games. This one I wasn't even looking for. Sometimes I try weird things. I've learned to try putting things in other things that shouldn't have things in them and stuff like that.
Some of us learned that earlier in life, but okay.
Right. So anyway, I'll talk about the bug later, but anyway, so that was fun.
Cool. John Acock on Twitter wrote that Plundered Hearts is an anagram of Punster Heralded.
Okay.
Yeah. I then started looking up other anagrams for the things. Reshaped Trundle is another one. Thunder Pleaders, which I like to say. So we played Thunder Pleaders this year. It's this episode. Yeah.
Nice.
I think that's all the feedback I got. It's all the feedback I wrote down. Anyway.
All right. Well, I have one more, which is a question I've gotten a couple of times, so I'm just going to hit it real quick. Michael asked, I'm a huge fan of your podcast and love hearing you recount your current experiences with these games. I'm curious, what games do you think you will do once you've exhausted the Infocom text-based adventure library? Will you move on to graphical games? Will you be doing to the SSI Gold Box Dungeons & Dragons titles? And I said to him, quite honestly, there were 35 canonical Infocom games, including a couple of graphical ones. We're committed to playing them all. And after that, it's going to be 2020. We might head over to Sierra Land. We might do Scott Adams, or Carrington and I just might be sick of each other and might go, you know what? We're done. We did what we said to do. And anyway, but that's a long way off, and I'm still enjoying playing Infocom for now.
Me too.
All right. So, shall we go on to talk about Plundered Hearts?
Yes.
Yes, unless Quinn has some feedback.
No, nobody wrote to me.
Nobody wrote to you in advance?
No.
Then we should talk about Plundered Hearts.
Yes. Plundered Hearts came out in September 1987. It was written by Amy Briggs. It was the only game that she wrote for Infocom, and also the only game Infocom published in the romance category, and did not have a difficulty level specified, although I would call it between standard to between light and standard, maybe?
Easy? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on the easy side.
Yeah.
Yeah, also on the short side as well. I think it was both easy and a little shorter than most of the games we played.
Yeah.
Not that it was super easy, but, you know, it was easier than some.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
The biggest thing I found was it's much more story-like. I don't know how to explain this, but they're all interactive fiction, but this one, more than any of the ones we've played so far, really felt like it was a novel or a movie. Like you're going through a plot. It has a beginning, middle, end. You are definitely going through a story here versus just a loose collection of puzzles in a setting that has maybe a string of a story or something in the background or a general goal. This really was a plot-based story that you would go through. And I really liked that. I wish more of them were like that.
Yeah, me too. It wasn't very puzzly, frankly. I mean, there was really only one or two major puzzles and a couple of little ones, and very little exploration. I mean, there was really only one place you could go. So it was really more about reading the prose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it opens amazing. Like, the opening is crazy different than native. Like, just, I even, my first note is just, what an opening with Switch Points. And I think back in public school or junior high, they taught me it's in media res, is this? Because it just, like, you fire up the game and bam, you are right in the middle of an action scene. In fact, like, the very first printed line is actually a command prompt with a command already entered. It says, shoot the pirate. And then it goes, like, trembling on, you fire your arc bus, which was, I think, the first of the words I had to look up. Mm-hmm. Kevin, this time I have joined you.
Yeah.
I have a list of four words I did not know before. So I learned four new things.
One, two, three,
but it's
four,
amazing.
Five,
it just opens.
I stopped at eight words and
looked up a few myself.
Yeah. I was like, well, this is new. But I like how it just opens right in the middle of an action scene, and basically stuff happens, and this guy comes up and is like, oh, you know, this person can't save you from me, but who will protect me from you or whatever? And then it's just like, you press enter, and then it goes into the game proper. And it felt like the opening scene was more like the bit of a story that would be printed on the back of a book or in the inside flap of a book jacket. Like, it's a little teaser, and I thought it was really effective. But I had to look up Arcbus.
Okay, so that...
Which is a type of gun.
That was lost on me then, because I actually thought that was a bug. I played in Zoom, and it didn't do that thing you just described where it pre-filled the command. It had the blurb of text, and then it had the command as though someone else had entered it, and it scrolled off to the top of the screen. And it looked like a bug.
See, for me, it opens with the line, shoot the pirate, trembling, blah, blah, blah. And it, as if somebody else had typed that. Like, I didn't type shoot the pirate, but it was like as if the game was in the middle of running and we were just at the scene, like, where you choose to shoot the pirate. And I didn't see it as a bug. I saw it as just an awesome way to start a game. Maybe it was a bug, and I just really liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was, I mean, I think you're right that it was intentional, but yeah, to me it just looked like the engine was displaying a blob of text from some other part of the game that I wasn't supposed to see yet, and then, because the second part looked like a typical Infocom endings, or beginning rather, so I just assumed that was where it was supposed to begin.
Oh, I think it was supposed to be like an opening scene, like a before the credits scene.
Yeah. It was actually supposed to be a dream. It's a dream sequence.
No.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay.
You think so?
I do.
I think Kevin might be right, because you wake up as soon as you start the game, right?
But you wake up on the ship, and I thought it was because you have been captured and you're on the ship, and then the other pirate comes who recaptures you, but he's the hunky pirate who you're going to fall in love with and do lots of dancing with. Yeah. I am definitely the target market for this book.
I'm on Team Kevin. I think it was a dream.
I agree.
He was dreamy. I'll give you that.
Yes.
Dreamy.
He was adorable. I agree that this was very story-based, much more so than some other games, and definitely more than something, say, like Suspended. And as a result, it was, I thought, a very linear game. Sometimes it's like, here's a world, explore this world and figure stuff out. And this was just like, okay, here's this part of the boat, you're going to figure that out. And then we're going to move to the part on the mansion, and there's... And then we're going to go to the other thing. And it was...
yeah, the spoilery thing.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was much more... Not that this is good or bad. It was just different. Much more linear than your typical Infocom game. Kind of just taking you in the line down the story, you know, from here to there.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked before about how a lot of the games open... In a smaller area where the map is relatively limited, and then it opens up. And the same thing happens here, where you start on a ship and it's a smaller world, and then you go into the bigger world. But the bigger world isn't as big as the rest, because it's kind of just based around a mansion. So I completely agree, you are kind of moved between location or sets of locations, that the action is going to take place there. And that's just because it's story written. Mm-hmm. I found that a perfectly reasonable compromise, because I was really enjoying the fact that this was actual interactive fiction instead of just a collection of puzzles.
Speaking of actual interactive fiction, I would like to stop for a second. Before you came on, Carrington, Quinn and I were talking, and she told me this was the first interactive fiction she has played in quite a long time. And I would like to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so this was a weird experience for me for a lot of reasons. I was telling Kevin, this is literally the first text adventure I have played in probably 30 years plus, maybe. I think literally the last time I played one of these games, I think I was 12 years old. So it has been a kind of a rediscovery for a lot of different reasons. You know, a good example of that is I completely forgot about saving your game. Because you just don't do that in modern games. Like, that's just sort of a solved problem. And so, yeah, I lost a bunch of progress and had to start over because I had forgotten to save my game. And then I had to sort of retrain myself to do that. So, yeah, I mean, I've been listening to the show here since the beginning. But the only game that I've played along with you guys, ironically, was the non-Infocom game, Thimbleweed Park, which I adored.
Right. So, and we played Fublitsky together.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. We did play Fublitsky. So, yeah, it was a really cool experience. You know, it was fun. I think this was a very good game to get back into this thing with. Like, I'm glad I didn't join you for Zork or something, because then I would have been like, oh yeah, that's why I stopped playing these terrible things. But you know, this game is very approachable and really quite and not difficult. I mean, I cheated a couple of times, mostly because I was really short on time to complete it, but this is a very gentle and approachable Infocom game.
I agree. I would recommend this as a first one. Most of the games we played, I do think, well, this shouldn't be your first Infocom game. This is one that you absolutely could pick up and would be a first Infocom game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I will say I was a little hesitant about it because all signs are that this is going to be like a bodice ripper, you know, those really cheesy, over-the-top romance novels that are really trashy. And it's really not. It's sort of an homage to those, but the writing is not trashy, and you know, there isn't a lot of gratuitous silly sex in it, and you know, it's actually a charming little story. It's not what I was afraid it was going to be.
I agree.
Yeah,
it also has one of my favorite location names ever, like when you you're on the ship and you do a spoilery thing. You end up on a certain deck, and like all the Infocom games, if you enter a room and it's the ballroom, it'll say ballroom. Mm-hmm. Or if you enter the large cave, you just get a line that says large cave and then a description. And so in this case, you climb up to a certain deck and just there's a single line that reads poop.
Yes.
Well, I laughed.
I also laughed.
Yep.
Of course. Everybody laughs at poop.
Yeah, I saved the game there, so I had to call the save file poop. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I do love how they embraced the theme in the parser. I mean, like on the ship, you could use fore, aft, port, and starboard, for example, mm-hmm. to navigate. And it had the vocabulary of the time, which, you know, like we were talking about having to look up, where I had to look up abaft. I sort of guessed what it meant, but I wasn't sure. And so it definitely had that the feel to it. I like that they adapted the parser to ship words.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like how when you saved your game as well, the response would be aye aye,
yeah.
mm-hmm. rather than exactly.
So I like that. Yeah. That kind of stuff was really good.
Yeah.
Some of the words I had to look up was folly, because like I knew folly as, you know, something foolish or a theatrical review, but the idea that it's a costly ornamental building that serves no purpose, mm-hmm. because it says you're in the folly. I'm like, what do you mean I'm in the folly? That sentence makes no sense to me. Like, oh, it's a building. Who knew?
I had given totally up looking me. Words. I mean, I'm not looking up words, but like writing down words at that point, because once I had 8 or 9 words I had written down included doyen, a woman who is the most respected or prominent person in a particular field. Arquebus, I think we mentioned before, was a portable yep. gun. I should have known the word coffer, being a strong box, mm-hmm. but I did not. Reticule, being a purse. Abaft, being in or behind the stern of a ship. Mm-hmm. Ratafia, a liqueur flavored with almonds or peaches or apricots, and Paphian, of or related to illicit love.
Ooh, I remember that one. I had to look up missish. That was a totally new one to me. Affectionately demure. Missish. Mm-hmm. I was like, missish? What is missish? So, because one of the ranks you can get is missish minx.
Yes.
And I got that rank once. I'm like, I'm a what now?
I had to look up reticule, a decorative lady's handbag.
Mm-hmm. You don't have one of those?
No, I
already have one, so.
My reticule is in the shop.
I see. I also thought it was kind of weird that she was wearing kid slippers, and so I assumed that those were like slippers made from kid skin, like a leather, like where you get kid gloves from. Yeah. But I've heard kid gloves, but I've never heard kid slippers.
She's stolen from a kid.
I'll kick you with kid slippers. Yes.
Nice.
So, all right, Infocom rookie question, back to that earlier question. So one thing that sort of surprised, well, two things that surprised me about this experience was, first, how adaptive the game seemed. And my question for you guys is this typical of Infocom games, where the game was quite good at reacting to where I was? Like, if I did something sooner than I was supposed to and I would encounter a character in a different room than I did previously, the character would respond differently and acknowledge that, oh, you're here sooner than I expected, or things like that. That surprised me. And then a bunch of the smaller puzzles here had multiple solutions, which also surprised me. And that was kind of a hallmark of the LucasArts games, but it surprised me in an Infocom game.
I think there were more that could do multiple solutions. Usually there's a few that have multiple solutions, but there were a bunch here that had multiple solutions, more than usual.
Yeah. And as far as the NPCs, I think the NPCs were particularly good in this game. There were a lot of them, and they seemed just particularly well-written and smart, and like you said, they would adapt to different situations. So while it's not unheard of for Infocom games, I thought it was just particularly well done for this game.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of my favorite things about NPC is there's one called Cookie, who's kind of looking after you, and who has a peg leg. And when Cookie walks, it says Cookie pegs after you. Mm-hmm. It was pegs everywhere. And I really liked that Cookie was pegging everywhere. Cookie pegs into the room. I was like, yes, he does.
Yeah, I liked all of the writing, frankly. There was a lot of lines that really gave me a chuckle. I think there was one point where I tried to do something I wasn't allowed to do, or that it wasn't going to work. And instead of just saying, oh, that's not going to work. Oh, I know what it was. I was trying to cut, this isn't a spoiler, I was trying to cut a canvas hatch with a piece of mirror. I thought maybe I could get up through the hatch that way. And the response was, to put it bluntly, neither the bit of mirror nor you are very sharp.
Nice.
I laughed
at a couple of things. Two of them I wrote down here. Due to my incompetence, at one point a ship blows up in the harbor, and it says,
Me too. It says
you hear a noise like a huge explosion in the distance, and the ground shakes beneath your feet. There should be good beachcombing tomorrow. And the other thing was, this made me laugh. Remove shirt. You remove the shirt, exposing your elbows. Remove breeches. You remove the breeches, exposing your ankles.
Yes. Yeah, I love the Victorian sensibility there.
Yes, yes.
Yep.
It's cute.
I liked all the clothing. I liked there's ball gowns and there's neat things to wear. I dug all these little details. I like the language. I really like the NPCs. I enjoyed the setting. I got right into the story. There's like scenes that I was feeling real tension. Like right at the beginning, there's a scene very early on after the supposed dream sequence where you're locked in a room and you're told like the big bad pirate is about to come through the door and do nasty things to you. And there's a couple of moves you have before that, and I was feeling serious tension, like, okay, what can I do? Like, I have no guns, I have no armament, I'm just like a lady. Like, I've got like my reticule, am I supposed to like swing it around my head or something? Like, and I felt some real moments of tension and also real moments of humor. Like, I was really like emotionally responding to this story, and in a way that I haven't for a lot of the Infocom games, so I really dug it.
Yeah. I agree. Especially near the end, there were some things I was just like a little tense about. Just like, why am I upset? I can save the game. I can go back. It's really not that big deal. I want to talk about the box, which we haven't talked about. Box is Plundered Hearts. It's a beautiful, particularly beautiful cover. Looks like maybe the cover of a romance novel or something. There's a woman in a gown and a chip pirate with his chest hanging out, and a bad guy pirate with a gun and a cutlass, and it's very, very cool. And I want to read the text from the back. In the 17th century, the seas are as wild as the untamed heart of a young woman. Ooh. But when you set out on the schooner Le Fondu, bound for the West Indies, your thoughts are only of your ailing father who awaits your care. Little do you know that your innocent journey will soon turn into a dangerous adventure. You barely survive an encounter with pirates whose plans for you include a fate worse than death. The explosives, the rocky reefs, the vicious crocodile, these are all obstacles which you must overcome with cunning and agility. True, it's not easy, but at least you can control your fate. What you cannot control is much more dangerous, your passion for Nicholas Jameson, the handsome pirate captain. Tall and lean, with azure eyes that penetrate deep into your soul. He makes your blood quicken despite his unsavory past. When you're in his arms, swirling around the dance floor or secluded in the flowered depths of the gazebo, you are apt to forget your mission. But don't dally too long with Nick, for your father is waiting, and on his rescue lies the fate of more than one man. Prepare for adventure on the high seas, lass. You'll need every bit of pluck you can muster. In Plundered Hearts, Infocom brings your wildest fantasies to life. You'll thrill to spine-tingling peril, heart-pounding romance, and challenging predicaments. To create this exotic adventure, author Amy Briggs read hundreds of romance novels, researched 17th century costumes and ships, and was wooed by a dashing pirate.
I was wooed by a dashing pirate.
Yes.
I like how in the game, he's the Falcon or he's Jameson, but there's this scene where you've been falling for him half the game, and then there's a dance scene. And not to get spoilery, but like you end up dancing with the pirate, this hunky pirate in the ballroom. And when you dance with him, he tells you some spoilery stuff. And I wrote down that he also says, "I wish you would call me Nicholas. I feel I know you much better than our brief acquaintance would allow." He presses your hand. And so then you dance with him. And after the dance, it says, "The music ends with a flourish and you pirouette once more before curtsying to Jameson. As you move to the side of the dance floor, Nick adds, we should separate. I'm sure I'm being watched. You would be safer." But and so what I liked is he says, "I wish you would call me Nicholas," and then from then on in the story it starts to refer to him as Nick. Like it's like in your inner monologue, You've started to call him Nick instead of the Falcon or Jameson. That's awesome.
Yeah,
I just really like that stuff.
That's really astute. Yeah, I had that in my notes as well. That so as your relationship with him, as you get closer, the way she refers to him gets more personal. So yeah, it starts off as Falcon, and then it becomes Captain Jameson, and then it becomes Nicholas, and then it becomes Nick as the story progresses.
Yeah, I really like that because I was like, you know, at first a little dubious about him, and I was like, oh, he's awesome, and he's going to save us, and he's great, and I just fell for the relationship completely. And I like how you save him as much as he saves you.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how you can tell it was written by a woman, I think, is that, you know, he's this dashing pirate and you sort of expect that, oh, okay, I'm going to be the damsel in distress here. But no, he's actually sort of a bumbling, lovable fool, and you actually end up saving him about four times, which I absolutely love. That was very charming.
It's like knowing Carrington.
It's like a bumbling charm. And I like how there's this scene near the end, not to get spoilery, but like that he's chained up and
yeah,
wake him, and he's like, oh, I'm going to yeah he is, but he's like, oh, I'm gonna basically defend your honor, I'm gonna stab these people, I'm gonna destroy them all, and if you could get me out of these chains first, please. And I was like, yeah, you totally need me. I really like that stuff.
Yeah, there's another scene where he comes bursting into the room to rescue you, and then immediately something terrible happens to him, and then you end up dragging him out of the room and picking up all the pieces.
Yep. And yeah. So I like that kind of stuff, that it turns it on its head, and because you are the star of the story. Although I do have, we'll talk after the spoilers, but I found three supposedly, you know, good final endings. I think they are ranked in the exact wrong order, and I strongly disagree with what the story seems to think is the best ending.
I think I agree with you. Yeah. I saw three of the four endings.
I didn't know the four. I found three as well. I found three endings. And I think if Infocom thinks they're ranked 1, 2, 3, I think they've got them exactly balanced.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. I want to talk about, normally I don't talk about the announcements in the status line newsletter, but I felt like Infocom was really pushing, I mean, they had this game written by a woman for women, and yet they didn't want to upset their primarily male fan base. So the the Satisfied newsletter, Peril and Passion in Plundered Hearts is the headline for the fall 1987 issue. And there's four quotes from people about the game, people who playtested the game. Two of them are women and two of them are men. And both of the men quotes are basically, this game was fun even though you had to play a woman. I mean, it's basically what it is. Let's see. The main character may be a woman, but I found Plundered Hearts every bit as challenging and exhilarating as other Infocom stories. I can't think of a better way to exercise my imagination. Andrew I. And the other one was, I was a little afraid I wouldn't like the game at first, being male and playing it as a female, but once you got started, it was no problem. I enjoyed it, Ron T.
Oh, goodness.
It was good in spite of all that dumb lady stuff.
Yeah. I did feel like there was a lot of costume changes compared to your mm-hmm. typical Infocom game, where you don't even think about clothing.
But sensible costume changes, though. You're trying to sneak into a ball.
Yeah, and it was in keeping with the genre. I mean, you know, costume changes for fooling people is a trope of the genre, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I liked it.
Yeah.
I like the costume changes. And there's secret passages, and there's dueling, and there's just everything in this that you would want from the genre. Like, it just checked all the boxes for me.
Good. Well, there was 57 boxes to fill, being 57 rooms in the game. So it was a small game. The average mm-hmm. Infocom game is 81 rooms, so it had 57. So if it felt small, it because it was small. Vocabulary, 816 words compared to your average of 976. And only 28 objects compared to the average of 36. So
there were a few words that I went looking for that weren't in the game. So I did bump up against missing vocabulary a couple times. Like, it knows clothes, but not clothing. Mm-hmm. There were a few things like that where I'm like, how can you not have that synonym? But just a few of them. But a couple of times I tried to use words and it said it didn't know them. I'm like, you should know them.
Yeah, I ran into a few times where it didn't know a word that it used for me. You know, like, it would say, you mm-hmm. see an X here, and I'd be like, pick up X, and it would say, I don't know what an X is or something, and I'm just like, but you mm-hmm. just described that thing to me. How do you know that word?
That kind of stuff can pull me out of the game. Yeah. When it especially if it describes a thing in particular, then I should be able to respond to it. You can use croc instead of crocodile, though. Mm-hmm. That was nice.
Yeah, and hugging Papa worked, which I...
okay.
It did nothing, but it worked, which I loved. I had a little moment with Papa.
Yep, nice.
Nice.
I killed Papa.
What? I tried. It wouldn't let me.
There is a way to unfortunately kill Papa.
You're a terrible person.
that's not the ending I chose.
Well, since we're talking about failure, and I did cheat a few times in this. I won't say where yet, but I ended up using the Invisiclues, which I had never used those before. You know, back in the day, they were only available as actual, you know, clues, and I wasn't going to spend money, so I had never used them before. And let me just say, what a fantastic format that is! Like, I was really pleasantly surprised by those things. The ability to sort of get just as much help as you need, I thought was really terrific. Because mm-hmm. there is something, you know, one of the feedback letters you got touched on this, there's something really demoralizing about cheating in these games. And I did it for a couple of reasons. Like, I'll cheat if I think a puzzle is unfair, but then if it turns out it was fair and I was just dumb, then that's frustrating. But yeah, and it's sort of a drug. Once you start cheating, it's hard to stop.
It absolutely is, yeah.
Yeah, and you definitely don't feel as good after, you know, finishing a game if you've cheated than if you had sweated it out. Like in Thimbleweed Park, you know, I sweated it out pretty much the entire way, and I felt really good about having done that. In this game, I definitely cheated more.
The end of that one is a lot of sweat.
Yeah, I started to cheat a little bit towards the end there, because I think there were some puzzles that were deeply unfair. But in this game, I think there's only one place where I really needed to cheat, and I do think that puzzle was unfair, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, I would like to
say that I cheated as well. Mm-hmm. Well, I talked about this game being easier than most of them, and I've been doing pretty well lately not cheating. I did have to look up a solution in this one. Yeah, I also use the Invisiclues, though. I do like those as well.
Yeah, I looked up a couple of things, sometimes just getting the first clue just to get put in the right direction. But there was one puzzle here that I thought could have been done better. I felt it was bordering on unfair, because I knew what to do, and yet I couldn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And okay. The, and then the thing, we might all be talking about the same puzzle.
Yeah. And then the thing that you had to do was just unfairly worded, and yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And there, the other place I cheated was just, I think, a flaw in game design. There was a point where I didn't have any clear goals. Like, I was just, there was nothing I needed to do. There was no, like, locked door that I needed to find the key for, or room I hadn't been in. It was just sort of the game just stopped and waited for me to guess where I was supposed to go next.
Yeah, I think I had that too, for sure.
I don't know if I got that. I did notice, or I forgot to mention, that the InvisiClues for this one were, it was a booklet that combined two games. So the InvisiClues hint booklet for this was Plundered Hearts and Beyond Zork. Hmm. And I didn't know they doubled them up that way.
Yeah, I think maybe they did it near the end, for smaller games. I don't know. Or maybe it was like, I bought it for Plundered Hearts, and now I might as well buy Beyond Zork because I already have the answers here. Mm. I don't know.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
It's like the hot dogs come in packs of 10, but the buns come in packs of 8.
I hate that.
Right.
That's how they get you.
Yeah, that's how they get you. So there's one other thing I wanted to mention. When I was researching something completely different for my other podcast, and I happened upon an interview with Anita Sinclair, who was, where did it go? Hold on, I lost my link.
Of Clive Sinclair's daughter's
founder? I don't know. A founder of Magnetic Scrolls?
Yeah, that's Clive Sinclair's daughter, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. I don't know her. I don't know Magnetic Scrolls. Apparently it was a British video game developer active between 84 and 90 and a pioneer of audiovisually elaborate text adventure games. I don't know this company. Or
like The Pawn and stuff. I know those ones. Yeah.
I only know them from Digital Antiquarian. He's talked a lot
that's
about
mostly where, that's mostly where I know them from as well.
So, I happened upon this article about, the article was from Advanced Computer Entertainment, which was a UK-based magazine, and the article is called Men Only, Why Girls Aren't Joining the Fun. And it was talked about her making magnetic scrolls and stuff, but near the end of the article it says, Does she feel her sex has hampered her career in the games biz? Not a jot. In fact, I've had more doors open for me because I'm a woman, she says. Anita has a pretty low opinion of Plundered Hearts, calling it one of the worst games ever written, largely because she sees it as a cynical and patronizing marketing device to exploit women consumers.
Wow. She obviously didn't play it then.
Harsh. It was a terrible game by our competitor.
Yes, right, exactly. Yeah. Next sentence. Not that Miss Sinclair sees herself as a feminist. I cannot stand or tolerate feminism in any form, she says.
I can't believe I have the vote, she says.
She's one of those.
I don't know. Anyway, so.
I don't. What? Okay.
I stumbled upon that and thought it was worth mentioning.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Whew. Mm. There you go. No reticule for her.
That's right.
So is it spoiler fence time? I'm excited to cross the spoiler fence.
Most of my notes are about spoiler stuff, so we should totally cross the spoiler.
We talked about the words. I can't talk about that.
But we have to pick a next game.
We need to pick our next game. We didn't talk about what comes in the game. Should we do that? Because it comes with a reticule.
Wait, it comes with a reticule?
Oh, the
feelies. I didn't know that.
Yeah, the feelies are sort of light in this one. I was a bit disappointed.
Yes, a little light.
I only thought it came with banknotes and a letter. Well,
apparently, at some point, it came with an elegant velvet reticule, being a blue pouch.
I mean, dice bag.
Right, yeah. And that contained a 50 guinea note and a letter from Jean Lafont. And that's it. A letter.
Well, your reticule in the game also contains a 50 guinea note.
Yes.
So.
Imagine.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Kind of useless as a feely then.
Kind of. Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Oh, actually, come to think of it, I didn't need the feelies to play the game.
Well, one of them, I think, comes in the... I don't want to say what, but one of the things in the reticule was pretty darn useful for trying to solve one of the puzzles.
Yeah, one of them told you how to solve the puzzles, but I didn't get it until after I'd gone through the InvisiClues on that puzzle.
Yeah, I forgot to look at the feelies before I played the game, so yeah. it made things harder.
I hadn't read the letter. I had just looked at the 50-guinea note. Hmm. And then I just started playing the game and I forgot to look at the rest of it.
So before we hit the spoiler fence, I can say before the spoiler fence, I felt that the game sometimes overplayed the female hand a little bit. that with all the, there was a lot of changing clothes, and then there was a lot of just like fire cannon. Firing the cannon is not in the repertoire of well-bred young ladies.
And yeah, then there was some of that. Yeah,
and then at one point I typed yell. It was like Papa always says, "Action, not reaction, girl." And take pistols. Ladies don't carry pistols. It, things like that. I tried to take the torch, and it was just like you can't reach them, and ladies don't use torches anyway. I'm just like, these are not normal times, people. Sometimes a lady needs to take a gun and a torch, and you know, I don't know.
Which is something we will come back to after the spoiler fence. This whole ladies don't take pistols business.
Yes. Yeah, and there was one deeply problematic version of that issue, which was that there's a point in the plot where you're actually forced to agree to go be raped in order to advance the plot.
Yep.
And even if you kind of expect that, okay, well, there will be some way out of it, the fact that they didn't give your character any other choice in that moment was deeply problematic.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. And if you say no, you lose.
Yeah.
And that's in my notes as well. But
it's not just it's not just the one guy and the one rape. I mean, there's another point where basically you have sex with one ending where you have sex with someone consensually ? And then they abandon you on an island. There's another one where I was forced to be a sex slave, and then the guy got tired of me, and then I was forced to be a prostitute on the streets of London or something like that.
Oh my goodness, I didn't get either of those. Holy cow.
Just like also, I mean, I felt...
What kind of choices are you making?
I made all the wrong choices. I feel like in these games, dying is fine. This is an adventure, and if your person dies, it's fine to restart. But I felt like the stakes were like... It made me not love this game. It's just like I felt like... It was just the stakes were like too high, and it was just I just didn't like the terrible things happening to this person, and it just made me feel bad. And I don't know, it made me fully love this game.
No, I agree. It was a game of extremes in that, the important thing in a game like this is agency. You know, it's extremely important with a female protagonist to ensure agency, and she went from both extremes to having, you know, tons of agency where she was rescuing Captain Jameson all the time, to the other extreme of, oh, you can't pick up a pistol and we're going to force you to agree to go get raped. That, you know, that mm-hmm. It was a weird mix. So it was sort of like it was written by a woman, but not a feminist, like a woman who doesn't totally get what she could be doing with this opportunity sort of thing.
Hmm. Yeah. I agree, but I think I gave it, all that stuff drove me crazy, and I've said this where we're talking about the ending, where there's a part that I hated about you having to say yes to a thing. I was like, what, you die if you say no? But at the same time, it felt like, okay, it's the 80s, and I'm playing a period game that gets a lot of things wrong. It's like if I watch an old movie and everybody's smoking, I'm like, oh, they were all idiots back then. And I feel like this is 30 or 40 years ago, whatever, and they were all idiots back then, and I'm much more woke now than I was even at the time. And I suspect I wouldn't even have noticed most of these things at the time. I also, you know what, I wouldn't even have played this game at the time. So I'm super glad that I did. I really liked the game. There was parts of it I hated. I hated how rapey it was, and I hated how often I was just going from being like the hero of this story, defeating all of the patriarchy with my wits, to suddenly being like a prize or a prop. And then I'd go back to being like the awesome hero again. I'm like, what's with this moment where I'm just going to be a prop? Oh, and I get that, like, our female listeners be like, see what it's like. But like, but I was already woke about this stuff, and it's uncomfortable to play the game. So those moments I found very uncomfortable, and they would pull me out of the game and make me write angry notes in our show notes. But that said, I really liked the game. I got emotionally invested. I enjoyed it. I wanted to be wooed by this pirate. I wanted to like just give the comeuppance to the bad guy. I had like a major hate on for this bad guy in a way that the other games we played, I haven't. I've, you know, wanted to kill the elves or the dragons or whatever, but I've done dispassionately. Here I had a passionate rage against the villain. And that's an achievement for a game. So I give it a thumbs up. I would recommend people play it with the caveat that it might be quite triggering because there's some, mm-hmm. some stuff in it that's super rapey. But if you feel like you could get past that, and the game does let you get past that, like then I would strongly recommend it. And I would even recommend it as a first Infocom game.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned LaFon because he is an excellent bad guy. Like, really, yeah, I think he was really well written, and I also had similar feelings of hatred toward him, mm-hmm. which yeah, that was surprising how I think how effective that writing was.
Yep.
And let me just throw also that I think that we can't blame the 80s. As much as you might want to for a lot of the stuff in this game. I mean, this could easily have been written today, and, you know, modern stories and movies and TV shows don't do much better than this. let's be honest about that. So yeah, I mean, this would probably pass the Bechdel test if it was a TV show, honestly, which, you know, most stuff today does not. So let's credit where it's due, but also let's, you know, still be aware that this is more than just a product of its time.
And it's too bad because really you could change like three or four scenes in it, mm-hmm. where it's not like just, you know, be a prop or be a sexual tool or whatever, and you could completely fix that, and this would be a feminist icon. Like, it got so close, and then there's the every once in a while you play the game and then suddenly it's like bang, it's like, oh, so like these four or five landmines in it that totally did not need to be there.
Yeah it's like the difference between like a female superhero movie and Mad Max Fury Road. Like, one is okay, you know, women kicking butt, great, you know, they're doing, you know, manly things or whatever, and the other is genuine female agency written from a female perspective, and that's it's a subtle but important difference.
Hard to live up to Furiosa, though. That's a bar.
Yes, that is a bar.
Probably like the greatest movie icon of so long. Like, please, what lives up to Furiosa? Yeah. Furiosa. But I agree with all that, though.
But yeah, like some small changes would have gone a long way. Like the pistols, you know, I get that they, for plot reasons, you know, they had to react to your actions that way. But they could have just said, you know, oh, they're decorative or they're nailed to the wall, instead of saying women aren't allowed to touch those or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Are we ready for spoilers?
Before spoiler fence, we're going to pick the next game. And Carrington, I told Quinn before the show that she is going to pick the next game for us.
Excellent.
Yes.
I agree
and
with that.
And she can play it along with us if she has time, but she probably doesn't. But she's welcome to if she wants to pick a game she wants to play.
Fublitsky 2.
Yeah, I'm glad that this one was short, because honestly, yeah, I otherwise would not have had time. The listeners are going to love me for this choice, and you guys are going to hate me for this choice. But
I'm worried.
We have to get it out of the way sooner or later. Yeah. And this was a game that meant a lot to me back in the day. So I've really, really been anxious for you guys to play it. And that game is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
All right.
Oh, yeah. The listeners have wanted us to play this one.
Yeah. I think we got to get that out of the way. And, it's, you know, cheat as much as you need to. I think we all know it's an unfair game that's, from a design standpoint, a train wreck. But it's charming. And I think it's the one we probably all remember.
It's
and I am a huge Douglas Adams fan, like the most Douglas Adams fansy of the fans, mm-hmm. like just massively so. So I am looking forward to it, but I suspect I will be cheating a lot.
It will be interesting to see how much I remember from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Excellent. Hitchhiker's Guide. I look forward to it.
Yep. Good choice.
In the meantime, we are approaching very quickly the spoiler fence. If you are going to play Plundered Hearts, and I think you should, you should not pass the spoiler fence, because we are going to spoil the game for you. We're going to ruin puzzles. We are going to make the game not fun. If you never are going to play this game and you're sure of it, or you've already played this game, then come along with us. Hop over the spoiler fence and we will continue talking a little more about this game and the puzzles and more specifics of things that we haven't talked about before.
So the very opening scene, yeah. Not the dream thing, but like you're trapped in the room and you're waiting for Crully to come in, and you find the coffer, and my pulse is pounding, and then I whack him in the head with the coffer.
Yeah,
that was remarkably satisfying. And I was like, wow, this game is maybe so satisfying within like three moves. You get 0 points for it. But I was like, I am on board with this story. I love the little cold opening, and I love finding the coffer, and the pirate comes in. I'm like, you know what? Screw you. Whack. Like, this is great. Like, so I really dug that. And because then after you've done that, then your hero pirate guy comes in, but you've already like knocked out the bad guy. And I was like, oh, this is excellent.
Right.
Very good opening. I dug that.
Yeah, and when the hero pirate comes in, he says, will you come with me? And you can say no and get your own ass to the next boat. And, you know, you don't have to go with him willingly at first.
Yeah.
So much agency at parts of this game.
Yeah, yes. For a moment.
So did you guys recognize the salt flavors all thing on his ring?
The which?
Cell Sapit Omnia, which is salt flavors all. That's on the Falcon's ring.
Hmm.
He's got the mock ring, and LaForge's got the real one.
I noticed that, and I Googled that like you would do back in the 80s to find out what that meant, and didn't understand the significance. So please tell me.
The only reason I know this stuff is the Salters was one of the big first guilds in London, you know, a couple hundred years ago. Why would I know that? Well, partly because it comes up in a bunch of period literature, but also because I went to Sheffield University. One of my degrees is from there, and there's nothing to do in Sheffield. Sorry, Sheffield people, but like you either take a train to London, or you can go to what I call the Spoon Museum. So there's like a museum of cutlery there because they were big in silver stuff, and you can learn all about how there was like the different smiths and the metalsmiths, like the guilds, and there was the big 12 guilds. And so I spent a bunch of time, I spent 4 or 5 times to the Spoon Museum. And so you learn a lot about like 18th century guilds in London. So I have a weirdly useless knowledge. And so when this came up, I'm like, that was a phrase I recognize. That would be the phrase, the Abato of the Salters Company, one of the first guilds. I'm like, wow, I have a bizarre knowledge just sort of bubbled up. And it's basically completely useless in the game. It's just like a thing that's on the ring, so you know the two rings are related. I kept thinking it was going to come up in some way. But I was happy to have memory of going to the Spoon Museum. So there was that.
Yeah.
In Sheffield, the other thing I got was Henderson's Relish. Everybody puts Hendo's, or are they something called Relly, on everything. Like, it's this weird spicy thing that every single food should have, but you're also not supposed to have outside of South Yorkshire. Like, you can't take it home with you. No, you can only have this in South Yorkshire. They are so into their Hendo. These are the only things I really took away from that, living in that city.
So that was all lost on me. I don't remember the rings at all.
Oh, remember, because the Falcon's wearing a ring, a gold ring, and then when you dance with the Ford, you spot that he's wearing a similar ring.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, it's neat how they've got that link. And then when LaForge gets his comeuppance, it even says a thing about how the Falcon, or Nick by that time, takes off his ring and grabs the one from LaForge and puts it on, like, because it's his brother's ring.
Hmm. I don't remember that.
Once you have to go back and play the game again, Quinn.
Yeah, clearly. Huh. Anyway.
It's really kind of useless, but the motto's on there, I guess, just so you can tell that the rings are related in some way. But it doesn't solve a puzzle or anything. It's just background stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So since we're talking about the ship, that's actually the first place that I cheated. That was what I was talking about earlier when I felt like there was a design issue there, where there's a point after you've kind of solved all the mini puzzles on the ship, keep it from exploding and yada yada, where you're sort of left with nothing to do. And I sort of had to remember that, oh yeah, I guess I should go to the island and figure out how to get off the ship. But yeah, I just wandered around for quite a while having no idea what I was supposed to do next.
Huh.
About getting in the barrels.
Like that. There was no motivation for me to leave the ship, really, aside from remembering that, oh, I'm supposed to be, you know, rescuing my father, and my father is on the island. But it was this sort of vague, abstract goal that I kind of forgot about. And
right.
So in the moment, I had no idea what I was supposed to do next.
Caring about other people. I could see how that would be difficult for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's not like there's like a skiff for a rowboat or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's not like a... But it's not like there's like a dinghy that you figure I'll get in that and row someplace. And you get into barrels to go out there. So it's not even obvious that here's what you should do. For me, it was one of my first notes was it took me forever, like a bunch of times to finally get to the point where I knew how to douse the fire on the ship with the wet rag. It was silly how long it took me to do that. And after all that stuff, I was like 80 or 90 moves in, I've got like 4 points. I get like 1 point for the fuse. I'm like, this is the lowest scoring game. Like, I feel like I've done a lot of stuff for having
There's only 25 points in that whole game. It's so different from the other games where there's like, you know, 400 in Zork or whatever. And whatever, it doesn't really matter whether you get 1 point or 25 to complete a task. But that was...
mattered to me. Different. It took me a lot of moves to get to figure out how to get that wet rag and throw it on the fuse.
I could not. Like, I did not figure out the wet rag thing. I had to cheat on that. And for a while, it was just like I like when you try to leave the boat in the cask without putting out the fire. It's just like at first, it's like you feel guilty. You're about the fate of the people who are left on the ship. And I was just like, "F those guys." And and I left.
They might come in handy at the
end. Yeah, and they come in handy later. So I had to look it up, and I don't know. I didn't feel like the thing with getting a rag and then wetting it and throwing it on the fire. I didn't feel like that was obvious or hinted at in any way. I don't know.
I kept looking for a cup or something like to take the water instead. It took me forever.
Yeah, I tried to tip the water over. You know, I don't know.
I think, yeah, that one actually, I guess that one felt pretty intuitive to me. I got through that. What I actually really liked about that puzzle was that there was, I think, at least three different ways to get a piece of rag, which I thought was really cool. Like it became clear to me pretty soon that I had to wet something and throw it over the fence because there was a comment about there being a 6-inch gap at the top of the gate. And I'm like, okay, I have to throw something wet over there. And there was no, I went to the kitchen and was looking for containers, cups, things, nothing like that. And then when I found, you know, when there was a bucket of water there, I was like, okay, I have to get something wet. Then I started looking for ways to get rags and found, multiple ways to do that, which I thought was really cool.
I can think of two ways. One, you could rip it off your own dress. Another one was sometimes randomly your dress would rip on something.
Which I liked. I think that was maybe, trying to help you a little
bit. I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Although sometimes that didn't happen until I was in the mansion, actually. It's just something that can happen, but not necessarily while you're in the boat. What's another way that you can get a rag?
I stumbled onto a third one. I think you could tear it off the bed sheets or something like that. There was another source of rag.
Oh, okay. I tore it off my clothes. Yeah, that's what I did. Nice. But I was able to solve it without cheating, but it was early on. I was like, my goodness, I'm already stuck. I know I got to get rid of this fuse. But so it wasn't intuitive to me. It took me quite a while to figure that one out.
Yeah, I actually like that puzzle quite a bit. I guess because I solved it. That's
why. Yeah, those are the puzzles that you like.
Exactly. Oh, that puzzle was great. I wouldn't change a thing.
So when you encounter, I think her name was Lucy. That's the lady in the kitchen who gives you the garter to send to Dinsford. I like how I took a note. When you leave the room, she yells after you, like, don't forget, tell Dimsford, Lucy calls after you. And I liked how the characters acted in this, I like the way you have conversations, but I like how they would shout things to you from other stuff when you'd leave it, or they'd turn up and make a little scene with you. I like the characterization stuff, and it was so story-like. I just really dug it. I dug it. And I like the garter, which when we talk about the end, I want to talk about why I think the garter ending should have been the better one, but whatever.
The garter ending is not the best ending.
No, the best ending is the Pirate Queen ending,
I want to talk about the portrait puzzle, which I think is what we were all talking about before.
All right, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, if you look at the 50 guinea note scan or that whatever came with it, it kind of tells you how to solve the puzzle. The guy has a hat on. He's holding a book and he is touching a globe. And so what you have to do to get past the portrait, the hidden secret door.
But is he pointing at the island on the globe?
Yeah, I guess. No, I don't know. So you have to like mess with the hat on the doorknob. It's like take the hat and you have to take the book, the secret book off the bookshelf. And then you have to touch the island on the globe. which
not just touch, and it does give you a hint because you touch the globe and it says, okay, you touch the globe randomly.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well, clearly I'm not supposed to do it randomly, but what's with the whole touch the island business?
Yeah, so you had to touch the island, which is the island you're on or whatever. I thought that was the touch the island part.
So are there clues in game that tell you about all these details, like touching the island? Because if there were, I missed them. This is the puzzle I had to cheat on.
I don't think so.
I cheated on this as well. I didn't see any hints at all. I had to go through all of the Invisiclues on this one. And even afterwards, I was like, that didn't really feel fair. Like, I don't feel like just having the picture on the Guinea note was enough guidance on that one.
Like, the other two, like, taking the book, that I just, you know, there's a bookshelf. So you look at it, you examine the stuff. Yeah. It says only the one book looks like it's ever been read. So you try to take it. And when you pull it, it springs back and you hear a scraping sound.
Yeah.
Okay, you can just discover that. Yeah. And then the hat too. There's a hat. So you pull it off and you hear like a low vibration. I mean, you got to figure out to put it back on so they don't know you're sticking through, but that's findable. But the idea that you have to press the island on the globe, I was like, what now? Like, so, and I could never found a hint in game that said to click the island.
I don't think there
the
was.
The globe you play with, but yeah. So, and when you look at the Guinea note, his hand's just on there.
Yeah.
Maybe his thumb's on an island, but who presses, he should be pointing on the Guinea note.
Well, so there was something that told me to press, like, it's like, where on the globe do you want to press? So that was enough to get me to press the island. But I couldn't get to touching the globe. Like, yeah, I got the book and the hat part because the game is helpful there. But touching the globe, I would never have figured that out from the Guinea note. That's where I needed the Invisiclue.
No, I never saw that. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to? I never saw a thing like that.
Yeah, no, yes. No, the globe. I totally had to cheat on.
Something led me.
And I didn't feel it was fair in the game. That I don't think you could solve it without cheating.
Yeah.
I do want to point out an interesting bug where you're not supposed to be able to take the hat from the room because you don't want to be caught wandering, but you can get it out of the room by throwing the hat out the window.
Okay.
If you want. It doesn't do any good outside or anywhere, but...
You just like to put all the stuff in all the other places.
I do. Yes. So, yeah, that was a weird one.
I liked how there were details in the actions that... I wouldn't think about. I mean, partly because I'm a guy and partly because I'm not familiar with this kind of narrative, maybe. But like I've got some notes, things like when you put on the gown, other Infocom games would have just said something like even if they want to make it nice, like the gown fits you, like it was made for you or whatever. And here it says, the beautiful ball gown fits perfectly. The creamy silk bringing a glow to your cheeks. You comb your hair with your fingers and bite your lips to make them red. Like those kind of details got me just swept up in the story versus just like the gown fits perfectly. Mm-hmm. Like I liked all the extra stuff. I just really dug
it. That sold it because, the idea that you're going to put on a gown and sneak into this gathering... I mean, women would know that putting on a dress isn't enough. I mean, your hair and makeup has to be done as well, or you're going to stand out. So that was, that was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm. I dug it. What else I got? I felt a major sense of accomplishment when I unlocked the cell. Like, you find the secret passage, you get past the crocodile, but I unlocked the cell and I find my father. And, like, I was like, yes! Like, I was so just caught up in it, and I just really dug it. And just major... accomplishment thingy, like when I found my papa in that, and I just really dug it.
So Quinn, you mentioned before multiple solutions to problems. I'm curious how you both got past the crocodile, because I think there's a couple ways to do it.
Oh yeah,
oh, I did the laudanum on the meat.
Yeah, that's how I did it as well. Laudanum on the meat. That I later learned. I think I was skimming through some Invisiclues and learned there was another way to do it, but. Yeah, I was going to ask you guys another Infocom rookie question, which is that is it usual to have what I felt like a lot of MacGuffins in this? There was, 50 items or something in the game, and I think I only used 10. Like, I solved two or three or maybe more puzzles with the laudanum. Like, the whole game, I was just like, oh, put the laudanum on it. Oh, put the laudanum on it. Oh, give him the laudanum.
Yep. Laudanum was super useful. How about I drug this? Put the laudanum in the wine. Put the laudanum in the meat.
I was really surprised that the laudanum was used twice. I was just like, the second time, it seemed like, for the wine, it seemed like the obvious answer, but it's already been used. And like, they wouldn't do that. But they did. You sort of do need it.
You know? Yeah, it almost felt lazy.
Yeah, for the butler. But that said, though, wasn't it amazing, though, when you've got the laudanum and the Ford, whatever, is there, and you're going to put it in the wine, and he clearly notices that you put in the wine. And so when he goes for the goblet, whichever one you put it in, he says, oh, which one was mine? Was it this one? It's so great.
This Princess Bride moment.
Do we want to talk about the Princess Bride puzzle now? Because I have issues with that puzzle.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Do you have issues?
What's your issue, Quinn?
All right, so that was the one for me where I knew what was supposed to happen, and I just couldn't get the game to let me do it. And I had to go through all the entire InvisiClue list on this one, and the InvisiClues on this were actually really cryptic as well. The InvisiClues weren't; it wasn't clear what exactly I was supposed to do. And then what annoyed me was that to succeed at this puzzle, you have to fail it. And like the only way through is to fail. And that
To like drug the wine, but he notices
like
you.
You're supposed to fail that puzzle so that you can go on to the next thing where the butler gets knocked out and all this other stuff. So
you have to have pre-drugged the wine so you can then give it to the butler instead, right?
Yeah. So your choices in this puzzle are get raped or fail at the puzzle. Like there's no victory in that, and that just felt really unfair. And then the moving pieces, the solution that I ended up getting through because of the InvisiClues felt like the thing I had done five times but didn't work. There was some subtle difference in what I was trying to do versus what the InvisiClues said to do. So when I typed in the InvisiClues, exactly, it worked, but I'm still not entirely sure why the other stuff I tried didn't work. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like it at all.
So for me, like, I actually really liked that because I liked that I clearly think, okay, there's two. I've got laudanum, and he's telling me to pour wine, and there's two goblets. So it feels like the story's telling me, okay, out comes the laudanum. I'm going to drug him. And so I put the laudanum in, but he spots me, but it's not really a red herring because you're going to use the stuff in the butler. But I liked at the moment though that I was. What does he say? I wrote it down here, and he says, oh, was this one mine? I seem to have forgotten. And I'm like, so sly and so annoying, like on my notes. So I like that he spots, but then you had just been told about how, oh, here's the spicy spices. And so I throw the spices at him, and it, blinds him or whatever. And I don't know, I dug it.
That's my issue, though, is that, so there's like six different routes through that wine puzzle where, you can drug the blue or the green goblet. You can tell him the green or the blue is his. You can do it at different times. At one point he's half turned away. Another point he's fully turned away. So all the combinations of those three binary choices, you end up with six possible routes through this puzzle, but all of them are failures. And the real thing is you have to throw pepper in his face, stuff was for nothing.
It was not the puzzle you thought it was. You thought it was a Princess Bride puzzle, but it wasn't.
Yeah, but you had to fail it. And
it was Great British Bake Off.
don't force me into a puzzle that I'm supposed to fail. Like that just feels like unfair design to me.
You and your agency.
And since we're talking about the pepper, so again, that was another case where I knew what I was supposed to do, but I couldn't get the game to let me use the verbs or whatever. And they didn't give you a lot of moves there. Like you only had one or two moves where you had to execute that. Yeah. And so
it was really tight. I think you had a total of three moves to do this.
Yeah.
So
I was trying to take the pepper and throw it at him and all this thing. And then maybe there's another way to do it. But what the InvisiClues ended up saying to do was, quote, take the pepper, then blow the pepper at LaFond.
Oh, I just threw it.
Now, that entire sentence is one command. That is three orders of magnitude more complex than any other command I've used in an Infocom game.
Yeah,
and I would never have believed that a command that complex would work.
Hmm. Yeah, my order was different. I took the pepper, then I pour the wine. I kept thinking, I can just have the pepper, I guess, holding it in my hand, and I do all the wine. Then he comes and spots the wine, and then you just throw the pepper out.
Yeah, you can take the pepper, but not too soon, because then it burns your fingers and you're forced to drop it.
Right.
So, yeah. But, yeah, for some reason, the intended solution is this incredibly complex sentence that you would never use in a text adventure because you wouldn't expect it to work.
You don't have to do it in that exact way. I mean, you could do get pepper and then next move, throw pepper at font, and it works fine.
Okay.
But if you don't like the puzzle, you don't like the puzzle. But don't get upset about the awesome parser.
It was the 80s, man.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, I'll let the pepper thing slide, because it sounds like there are sort of rational ways to do that besides this crazy sentence that the Invisiclues had. But I do, yeah, I have pretty deep design issues with that wine puzzle.
I like how after I rescue my father and I return to the main part of the house and to look for Falcon, because he's like taken off again, and then the big bad approaches me and asks me to dance, and I like, again, I have to dance with him. And that didn't feel like, it felt like a lack of agency, but it was an okay sort of lack of agency. Like, always grab me, okay, you're going to dance, but I will defeat you. But I was really feeling the frustration of trying to defeat this like powerful dude when all I'm armed with is my wit, and he's got all the power and the minions and the weapons, and I can't just stab him or beat him up like in a normal adventure game. Like, I'm just so used to just be able to stab things or shoot them, and instead I have to suck it up and dance with him. I was like, oh, it's so annoying. And then what did I write down? He says a fashionably bewigged man stalks up to you and bows deeply. Will you dance, he asks, with a light French accent. Not that you have much choice. If you turn me down, your father dies. And so you have to say yes. The have to say yes stuff. Says you summon a gracious smile. Why, yes, I'd love to. I am, of course, La Fonde. He laughs triumphantly and pulls you into the dance. I just wrote down, ah, you reptile, I shall defeat you. I was so caught up in wanting to just beat this guy. I just really liked the emotional responses it was getting from me. Even having to dance with him just made me so stabby.
So to summarize, you were railroaded into a situation where you had no power, and your only way through was to passive aggressively manipulate the situation.
See, you wouldn't understand what I'm talking about.
Yes, welcome to being a lady.
You don't know what I mean. You don't understand. You've never gone through something like this. See, this is a unique situation to me.
That's right.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but it was very, very annoying. I said, you reptile. Oh, so slimy.
Yep, it's the worst.
Yep, it is the worst. It took me a while to figure out to signal the ship with the tray, to like basically wave the tray at the window.
That's like the one thing I figured out on my own.
I did figure it out on my own, but it was like, okay, how do I is there fire? Can I light something? Like, how do I got the butler knocked out, or like, how do I do this? Wave the tray at the window. Okay, that works.
Oh, you used the tray for that? I think I used the mirror for that.
Yeah, so did I.
Oh, man.
Interesting.
I didn't think they used the mirror. Matter. I just was holding it. Yeah. So anyway, the tray works. I guess the mirror would have been easier.
That's cool that the tray worked.
Yep. But it was a great victory moment, though. You wave it, and it's like it says you wave it at the window, and then after a moment, the flash of light responds. I'm like, yes, my pirates are on their way. bring my pirates to me. Yeah, I felt really good about that.
I will say, in the rape scene, you know, when Jameson bursts in, I mean, one nice thing about the stakes being so high with that scene was that when Jameson bursts in to rescue you and fails, hilariously, I was legitimately crestfallen by that. So that was kind of a cool moment. You know, that's the upside of the intensity of that scene is that it makes the impact more emotional, I think, when things go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another, in a sense, emotion in the game was there was real moments of comedy, like stuff that really made me laugh. I like how you get past the crocodile the first time. Well, for me, I did the laudanum on the meat. And I like how the second time you have to go through, Cookie is just like, I got this, and just dives in the water. It's just like, man, I was like, yeah, okay, I guess that's easier. And then Cookie's just like in the water for a while. And then when you rescue Nick, by this point, I'm thinking of him as Nick. And then like you use your brooch or whatever to unlock his chains. And then he kisses you and runs out, and you just kind of hear him run down the hall, and you hear Cookie yell, "Hello, Captain!" as he races past it, because Cookie's just still wrestling with this crocodile, and I just really like that. And I like how your dad, when you've drugged the crocodile, walks by and it just like sort of pats the crocodile on the head. Hey, I haven't seen you sleeping there before.
Yeah.
So, and when, stuff like that. There was a real
when you finally leave, Cookie's just like, "Oh well, if you're not going to be here, I'm not going to fight this crocodile anymore."
Yeah.
Okay, I'm done just wrestling this crocodile. Oh. I just like how he just dives in and wrestles the crocodile. Cookie was great.
Well, and
pegging everywhere after you.
And on your way out, your dad wakes up the crocodile, which made me laugh because mm-hmm. I've just spent 20 minutes figuring out how to put this thing to sleep so I could get through and rescue him. And then on the way back, dad pats him on the head and wakes him up.
It's like, why would you do that? Dad. I'm going to have to come back, pass his way. And like, yeah. But again, good writing stuff. Yeah. Like lots of, so I dug that. Yeah.
What did you guys think about the puzzle where Crawley is climbing up the well in the bottom of the dungeon?
Oh yeah, well, I like the fact that you finally grab a sword, mm-hmm. and it was kind of neat how you're not really good at the sword, and even says you kind of barely know which end is which, and even he's like, whatever. Yeah. But then you stab at him, he's like, oh, hold on, and you stab again, and he falls down the hole. I'm like, yeah, you take that. I would have rather really stabbed and run him through, but I liked it. At least I was finally picking up swords and doing stuff, so that was cool.
Yeah, and then he falls into.
But then yeah, he's climbing up with his hook.
Yeah, he's climbing out of the hole, and I thought that I could just close the trap door and that would be it. But it's not that kind of puzzle. It's just a timer now. He's gonna get out of that hole, whether or not you close the thing. And it's just a matter of you have to finish the next bit before he does it. So I was fine with it. I liked that part.
Yeah, I did feel like it was a missed opportunity because I felt like I spent a while trying to figure out how to trap him down there by closing the lid, which seemed like an obvious thing to do. So I was trying to put heavy stuff on top of the lid, and I tried standing on the lid and various other things.
Oh, that doesn't work.
Yeah, none of it. It all fails for various reasons. But I don't know, that felt like an obvious opportunity for a second solution to that puzzle.
Yep, and I thought maybe, or I'd be able to throw something down at him or whatever. It also, that's another one that made me think of Princess Bride, though. It's like I kept thinking, am I supposed to just wait? He'll come up and I'll fight him left-handed? Like, what's...
Yeah, and because going for the sword seemed, I don't know, like it was too obvious or something, so I didn't expect it to work, I guess, like just attacking him.
Especially after having been told you don't pick up swords and guns or whatever. Yeah. Like the game tells you you don't do these things, even though it does open with the shoot the pirate, which is, I guess, a hint for the very end of the game.
It's almost like the rules of what you can and can't do as a woman are arbitrary.
Almost.
Let's explain this to Quinn.
Yes, please explain.
Welcome to Mansplained by a Group.
Mansplained by a Group. And it's just not a fighting game.
Which I liked.
It does set you up to not expect the sword to be the solution to that puzzle, I think.
Mm-hmm. Although it's pretty awesome when the big macho duel's going on in the ballroom, and instead of like going down there and grabbing a sword or whatever, you go up to the top and undo the chandelier and like swing down. Like that is an awesome pirate movie thing to do. So I enjoyed that.
That was delightful. And the fact that it was you doing that and not Jameson, you know, which would have been the cliche for him to swoop in on the chandelier and save you. It's the other way around.
And it's so much fun to do it at the wrong time. If you just do it in the middle of the party, it's fun.
I did it super early.
If you do it a little bit too late, after he's already killed Jameson, he's just like surprised and he just like slices you in half with the sword as you come down, and that's pretty awesome too. We kept mentioning Princess Bride, so I know that this game came out in September 1987. I'm just like, wait, when did Princess Bride come out? Mm-hmm. And it came out September 25th, 1987. Mm-hmm. These things came out the same month of the same year.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah, so
inconceivable.
Oh, groan. Jimmy Marr actually did a great bit on that in the Digital Antiquarian article on this game, which I read after playing it. I'm glad I read it after, not before. He actually, in his trademark style, actually researched that, and he figures that both sources got this puzzle from the same place. There was an earlier popular pirate story that had this puzzle in it that came out before both the movie and this game. Apparently it was actually a fairly common trope in the genre that I didn't realize the whole wine swapping thing. Yeah.
I could see that. I guess I've seen it lots of places, the whole which one's poison and swap it around. I guess that had been around for a while.
Yeah, I think I assumed everybody got it from the Princess Bride. But leave it to Jimmy. He determined what the actual common source is for all of these things that have it.
Go Jimmy.
Yeah.
So we should eventually start talking about the ending of this game. Because I hated on the beach at the end when LaForge shows back up with the pistols and there's going to be another duel, and then he makes me one of the terms or prizes of the duel, and I have to say yes to it. Yeah. And I was like...
Yeah.
I keep refusing. I would just like, no. And if you say no, then it's like, well, then take them in and they you die. And I was like, and I kept trying to back up and say, like, can I not be in that position? Mm-hmm. And the game forces you through this bottleneck where you will just be the prize and the guys will fight over you. And then it changes again and you grab a weapon or whatever. Yeah. But I hated by this point, like the fact that I had to say yes to this.
Yeah.
Hated.
Yeah, that was really disappointing. And yeah, and I definitely played a lot of Guess the Noun in that puzzle, because again, I knew exactly what the game wanted me to do. I just, you know, I had the gunpowder, I had the pistol, and I knew all the pieces I had to put together, and I just couldn't get the right combination of words that would let the game have me shoot the guy, which was annoying.
Huh, sorry.
Yes.
I didn't have that problem, but I play these games a lot more than you do, so maybe, yeah. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, though, the endings, like, I think, well, first of all, we gotta talk about the Pirate Queen ending, which I think is the best ending, but the idea that the game clearly is saying that the best ending, the happily ever after ranking ending, is when you pick up the pistol and you shoot Crully, mm-hmm. and so then everybody lives, well, everybody good lives, and the bad guy gets stabbed by the hero pirate dude, and your dad gets to live, and that's happily ever after. But I think that's the lazy, crappy one. It should have been, if you pick up the pistol and you shoot, that's the one that somehow your dad dies in. Like, you shoot Crully, and as he falls, he shoots your dad. And you should have to instead do the garter one. The fact that you step on that rock, and you can put the rock in your garter and make a slingshot and shoot the rock at Crully, but that ends up killing your dad because it will fall off the cliff. I felt those were completely backwards. It should be, if you pick up the pistol and this just phallic symbol of the patriarchy and you win the game that way, you should be punished. Like, that's the one that shouldn't be quite as good. The fact that you can take out the pirates with your garter is such a more satisfying ending, and that should be the one that is supposedly the best ending. Yeah. It really bothered me that was the, you get the title of orphan or whatever, and it says there's better. I'm like, no, there is nothing more satisfying than that. Then it turns out, yes, there is something more satisfying being a pirate queen, but it just bothers me that the game says picking up the pistol is the better way to go than the smarter solution of the rock and the garter.
Especially after it already made the point earlier that you shouldn't be using pistols.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And using the garter is just a more clever solution. I mean, the pistol is the absolutely obvious answer. Like, of course you're going to try that, so...
And it would have been so much more fun to get to the end of the game and, like, you've technically solved it. Here's your 25 points and you use the gun and blah, blah, blah. But the game would give you the hint saying there's probably a more satisfying conclusion. And... you know, if your dad died with the pistol one or whatever, you think, well, how could I find a better solution? And the idea that instead of the pistol, you would use your garter and make the slingshot would have been an amazing, like, oh, wait, I found the better ending. Because everyone's going to find the pistol ending first and then go looking for other things. It would have been such a better way to write it. I really wish they were reversed. But honestly, the best ending of all is, like, screw all of you guys and all of what's going on here. And you just get in the skiff and go to the boat. All the men die and you become the pirate queen. I'm like, you know what? I have found the new best ending.
I actually didn't know about any of those other endings. I did the pistol thing and I was like, okay, well, I won.
If you just instead just wade out to the skiff, like the thing, and you don't get the pistol, you know what? Screw you all. Yep. Down with the patriarchy. You get in the skiff, you wrote, what does it say? You dip your oars and pull them towards you. The skiff plows through the lagoon. You hear distant shots and screams and gaze back across the restless waves to the massacre on the beach. The sight blurs with your tears of shame, tears for the father and the lover you left behind. The tale you tell Jameson's crew of rapine and blood, of your heroic attempts to save their captain and of your own escape after his death in your arms is not so far from the truth that you cannot appear sincere. Cannily, you take advantage of their temporary grief, select a private guard and teach the rest the discipline of the whip. Thus, you have finished the story of Plundered Hearts, earning the title Pirate Queen. I was like, that is the best one. And the fact that it says there are other, perhaps more satisfying conclusions, I'm like, no, there are no more satisfying conclusions than becoming Pirate Queen.
Huh, that's really interesting. Yeah, because the pistol one doesn't say that there are other endings. So that's...
yeah, because that is just the happy one. And I was like, disappointing. I don't like the pistol.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah, just, I was like, you know what? Screw you all, I'm rowing away just to see what happens. I'm like, what happens is the best thing in an Infocom game ever.
Yes, it's really good. The other ending, and I'm sorry, I didn't copy-paste it, but I'll try to summarize it, is called, the fourth ending is called Love Transcending Death. And you get this rank if you, instead of firing the pistol at Crowley, you fire the pistol in the air. Basically, you surprise Crowley. He shoots you. At the same time, Jameson gets hit by a sword, and you both die together. Your lips land on his. You have an everlasting kiss, that, and you're both dead.
Oh, jeez.
Wow, okay.
I never got that ending. I didn't even think of another pistol one. Wow.
That's laying it on a little thick.
That's good.
No.
That's good. Yeah, so I, the fact so that the, I... the happily ever ending, happily ever after ending, I think, is the third best ending.
Absolutely. I think that's why I say the endings are absolutely ranked in reverse order, because getting a private guard and teaching the rest the discipline of the whip, like, come on. I have become the most awesome character ever. It's my favorite ending of any of these games so far. It is the best. Just like, down with the patriarchy. I'm sick of all of y'all. And you're raping and you're shooting and you're stabbing and, like, just, oh, I'm leaving this beach. Kill each other for all I care. I'm teaching them the discipline of the whip. It's like, it's the best. And it's unfortunate because it's not supposedly the best ending. And just like Quinn, like, you'll play it, you pick up the pistol, which is the obvious solution. You'll shoot it, you'll end, you'll get 25 points. You wouldn't even think to look for other stuff.
Yeah, that's another just missed opportunity in the design. There was no indication that there's three other really interesting endings.
Yeah, and I think because they think the happily ever after one is the best ending, so why tell you to look for other things? So I'm like, but it's the obvious ending, and it's not nearly as satisfying as the other ones.
I wonder if they changed that. Like, this is one of those things that maybe they did QA and decided that people couldn't get the satisfying ending, so they changed, you know, the wording around, or they made it so that the pistol shooting was obvious or something like that.
Hmm. But it is too bad, because I bet a lot of people play this game and never become the pirate queen, so they're missing out. What I think. Because I am a pirate queen.
Yes.
Yes, in your heart you are, we know.
Absolutely.
Totally. In my pretty ball gown, I bite my lips to make them red, and I become the pirate queen. I love it.
Oh, I've always said that about you.
Many people have.
Next Kansas Fest is going to be fun.
It is going to be fun. I will totally
Wondered
be
Wondered Hearts Parsley LARPing.
Yeah. I would do that. Yeah, Ken would totally lead us through that. That'd be great. So anyway, I like this game a lot. It was super rapey and triggering that way, but I was able to look past the problems because I did like the puzzles. But I think Quinn's right. There's not a ton of puzzles in this game. It's much more plot than puzzle. Yeah.
I like that about it, though.
But that's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I like that.
Me too. I wish more than one of
them. Yeah, I like the length a lot. Like, it felt like a game that a busy adult can play. You know, it's not a 50-hour commitment or whatever, like a lot of the other games, I think, are.
Yep, I get my money's worth much more quickly than that.
Yeah, I think I knocked this.
There should be adult versions of games. You should be able to pick, like, easy, medium, hard, adult.
Totally.
And it just told me, it's great. Your time is very valuable. Yes. The $50 or $80 on this game didn't really break you. If I give you like three good evenings, you're going to be very happy.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah, they need a teenager mode and a busy adult with job and kids mode.
Exactly.
Because, I think I burned through this in 8 hours, which, you know, would have been more if I hadn't cheated through a couple of the really tricky bits. But that felt great to me. Like, I was very satisfied with that.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, worth playing. I don't know if I have other notes about puzzles, though. I think that were all my notes.
Yeah.
Yep, that's all I have to say.
I had one weird thing. Towards the end, when you're trying to signal the ship, I'm trying to hold the mirror, and I know I'm supposed to use the mirror somehow, and I didn't do quite the right thing, but the game had a weird response that was just sort of nonsensical. So I typed the command, hold mirror out window, and the response it gave me was, but the bit of mirror isn't in the shutters, which that felt like the parser just barfed. Like, that didn't...
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, it was a nonsensical response, so that that was weird. But it
was telling you to use the tray instead.
Weirdly, it told me what to do, which was that I had to open the shutters first, but it was strange the way that it responded.
Yeah, that's strange. That's the bug I found and reported to Nathan. If you leave the island in the skiff to try to go back to the boat, which is not something you need to do, but it's something you can do, if you do that while you're wearing the beautiful ball gown, you're screwed. You tie the skiff to the boat. It says you tie the skiff to the end of the ladder, then climb partway up it, and you're on the ladder. And you type up to go up the rope ladder. It says, in these clothes, you jest. And you type down. It says, in these clothes, you jest. And if you type undress, and it says you can't manage the fastenings while whipping to and fro on a ladder. And that's it. You're absolutely stuck on the ladder.
Oh, interesting.
If you're wearing your ball gown when you get back on the boat.
Yeah. Okay.
So let that be a word to the wise. Don't wear your dress on a boat.
Yeah. And run from pirates.
Yeah, I found a lot of cases where it wouldn't let me do something if I was wearing the dress, but that's interesting that it'll let you get onto the ladder and then you were trapped.
Yeah.
Did anyone try walking around the ship without putting on the scruffy clothes? Because I felt like that...
Oh, no, I didn't.
I felt like that. I accidentally solved that puzzle because Jameson talks a lot about how his men can't be trusted around women, so I... You know, put on the cabin boy clothes to sort of to disguise myself. But I wondered what would happen if I hadn't done that.
Oh yeah, I put them on too. I never walked around without them as well. I don't know.
I bet it doesn't end well.
Yeah, maybe more rape.
Yeah,
probably more rape. I got the rank of plucky lass once. In 169 turns, you have achieved a score of 11 out of 25 points. This gives you the rank of plucky lass. I got daring demoiselle. I got Lady Le Man. I got Mrs. Schminx, which made me look a missus. I got a bunch of them. Nothing as good as Pirate Queen, though.
The points were very... Maybe this is typical for Infocom, but the points were very backloaded. Like, I was 80% of the way through the game and had 4 points or something, and...
Yeah, and then suddenly they start piling
up. And I was getting worried. I'm like, how long is this thing? Because I guess I was used to the Sierra games where the points are very linear. You can pretty much tell how far through the game you are by your score. And this was definitely not the case, so don't...
Oh, yeah, no, I think by the time I rescued my father, I'm near the end game. I've got something like 11 out of 25 points.
Yeah, which, you know, for anyone who's playing it, don't be worried by that if you're worried about that it's going to be too long.
But if you're listening to this part of the podcast, you should already play
this. Good point. Yes, if you've gotten this far, too late.
Mm-hmm. Too late for you. Anyway, I dug it. I say yes. I say thumbs up.
I give it a soft thumbs up. I really was bothered by the parts I was bothered by, and but it was fun. It was good. It's not among my favorites, but it was all right. Gwen?
Yeah. I also give it a soft yes. I think it is a good intro or reintro, in my case, to Infocom games. I think it's a good one for people to start with. I think it's a good one for busy adults because of the length. And I think it's very approachable because of the more story-driven and less puzzle-y and explore-y nature of it. You know, I did draw a map, but I could actually see people getting by without because there just isn't that much that's confusing in the navigation. So, I think it's a great starter game.
I think it's one of my favorites we've played so far. I dug it hugely. I had a massive emotional reaction to it. I laughed. I was swept up in it. I was annoyed by the parts I didn't like, which just shows how much I liked the parts that I did like, that I would get that angry at the parts that I didn't like. And I didn't get that kind of reaction to any other games we played so far. So just in terms of fiction that affected me, it's a total winner. And
if you like to be annoyed, you're going to love Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes. No, I'll second that. It was my favorite of the ones we've played also.
Yep. So there you go. Between this and Fublitsky.
It's the only one. Come on, no last for that? Come on. Jeez, tough room. The only one we've played, the three of us.
Fublitsky.
Oh, right. Okay. Actually, I like Fublitsky a lot.
I'm going to say which had those cute dogs and the amazing graphics, so I probably like Fublitsky better.
I like Fublitsky a lot.
So there you go.
Wait.
Anyway, cool. Wait, there's a wait.
Yeah, we did a show about Fublitsky, right? Yeah, so I was on the show before. Yeah. Okay, wow. This is my second appearance on Eaten by a Guru. I'd completely forgotten that.
That was 6 months ago on July 22nd.
Wow.
Yes. Okay.
I'm glad
you're a regular specialist.
I'm glad it was a memorable experience for
you. Clearly, yeah, clearly I'm repressing it, I guess.
Well, there's a lot of definitions of the word special. Yes, well. So we say special guest, you know.
I didn't feel like I had any agency. You roped me into being on that show.
Yep. You had to say yes, just like in this game. Oh, annoying parts. So cool. So I think that brings us to the end. I'm going to say goodbye. I'm going to wrap it up. That's what I'm going to do. This has been Eaten by a Gru, the Infocom podcast, Infopod Comcast, that occasionally has special guests. If you want to, you can send us feedback by email at gru@monsterfeet.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter. I am at Carrington. He is at Kevin Savitz. She is at Quinn Dunkey. And we will be, two of the three of us will be your best friends forever. I'm not saying which two. If you give us a very nice review in iTunes and encourage other people to come join the fun. The show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks very much to MC Frontalot, the most frontaloting of all the MCs, for letting us use his tune as our theme song. And thank you, Quinn.
Thank you very much to Quinn. Yeah,
my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. And we'll see everybody next time for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, oh no! You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
Hello.
Hello.
How are
hey,
you?
I know that voice.
From your nightmares.
Yeah, yep, that's the place.